Do you want to ride your bike, or do you want to learn how to train so you can really ride your bike?
It's all about building fitness. Get your legs spinning and get your heart pumping. It's not about training what you're good at. It's about training what you're not good at. They'll want to know what you've been doing for the last few months because you'll be kicking their ass. This is exactly how you get ahead. This is exactly how you get stronger. I'm giving you the tools you need to be a beast on two wheels. If you do the things I'm talking about, you'll be stronger, you'll be fitter, you'll be faster, and everyone around you will notice the difference. This is Tailwind Coaching, and you're listening to the Tailwind Coaching Podcast. All right, welcome everybody back to another edition of the Tailwind Coaching Podcast. It's been about 5 to 6 weeks since my last podcast, and there is actually a really good reason for that. In fact, the reason I've been absent for about 5 to 6 weeks is one that will actually put me directly, make me directly affected by what I'm going to talk about today. And if you've looked at the title on the webpage or the title of the actual podcast itself, you're going to know we're talking about how to avoid the intensity trap, part two. About 6 weeks ago or so, I did the first part of this podcast, avoiding the intensity trap, part one. And gotten a lot of excellent feedback from that. In fact, a lot of people wondering where are you, what happened, and I'll get into that in just a few moments. But first off, I want to thank a couple of my sponsors, the guys who are paying the bills, so to speak, for me. These are the guys who, when you click through and you buy something from this group or this company, they throw a few shekels my way, and that helps to pay for web hosting space. It helps to pay for bandwidth and all the other stuff necessary that makes it possible for me to continue to bring you free, awesome podcasts and good information without paying a dime. All right, so to thank those guys, I want to just thank, first of all, Road ID. Imagine you're out riding and the unthinkable happens, an accident, a fall, a crash. God forbid you're hit by a car or a medical emergency befalls you, and somebody finds you lying in a ditch on the side of the road. But the problem is, most of us, at least I don't, and I'm going to guess most of you out there, don't really carry a wallet with you when you ride. So they just found a body or a person, not a body, hopefully not a body, a person laying in the side of the road and need to call EMS. Well, wouldn't it be nice if your loved ones would be able to find you at the hospital and make sure that you're okay when you don't come home from that two-hour ride after, well, 6 hours or so? Road ID makes that possible. I strap it on every time I go out. I have it with me every time I go out on my bike. So it's like 15 or 16 bucks. Click through the link on the upper right side of my page, and Road ID will thank me for the referral by throwing a few shekels my way, and you'll support my cause as well as keeping yourself safe and your loved ones reassured that you will not be John Doe in the hospital emergency room. All right. And second sponsor that I'd like to thank Competitive Cyclist. As all of you know, I am a big, big, big advocate of buying local, support your local bike shop. In fact, my Stage's power meter from my racing bike was ordered through my local shop, and surprisingly enough, they give me the best price out of everything, short of eBay with a used part, which we know how that goes sometimes. So if you don't go to your local bike shop, or for some reason there's that one occasion where your local shop can't get what you're looking for, head on over to Competitive Cyclist, one of the biggest online dealers of high-end road and mountain bike equipment, bikes, frames, and apparel. And let me tell you, folks, I've used Competitive Cyclist a number of times in the past, especially when the local shop was unable to get something. And I'm going to tell you, their Competitive Cyclist customer service is really excellent. The shipping is quick and very reasonable, and they offer a whole lot of, for lack of a better term, expert advice on selecting the right equipment for you, should you need it. In fact, looking for a very odd-sized bearing for a headset, I was able to get one of their reps on line chat on an online chat, and we were able to hammer it out in about 10 minutes. That's after I spent 2.5 hours searching all around the internet trying to find the correct bearing measurements. So, guys are great. Again, click through the upper right corner of my webpage if you're there, tailwind-coaching.com, and go ahead through when you buy something. And again, they'll toss me a few ducats towards hosting this podcast. All right, so that out of the way. Don't forget, if you need to contact me, coachrobdc@gmail.com. You can also find me on the Tailwind Coaching Facebook page. You can find me on Twitter at coachrobdc. You can also just go to the website, tailwind-coaching.com, and in the upper right corner, you will find a whole lot of ways to contact me. All right, Podbean, iTunes, all kinds of stuff up there. Even Strava, which I haven't been using a whole lot, mainly because we haven't been outside. But keep that in mind. You can always find a way to contact me on the website. And now, speaking of iTunes, please do me a favor. Go on to iTunes, find this podcast, rate it 5 stars. The more ratings I get that are high 5-star ratings, the more people will be able to see this podcast, the more people will get this information, the more people I can help. Remember, folks, I went into the medical profession because I like to help people. I coach people because I like to help people. I've done free clinics. I do this free podcast. I love getting information out there. So the more people that rate this podcast positively, the more people will be able to actually see it. So go ahead over at iTunes, find the Daily Grind Cycling Journal and Tailwind Coaching Podcast. Rate that sucker five stars. If you really hate me for some reason, well, I don't know why you're listening, but go ahead, rate it 1 star, and at least leave me a reason or drop me an email. Maybe you'll make it on the show. But I prefer the 5-star rating anyway. So head on over, rate it up, and be doing me a huge, huge favor in terms of getting that word out there. Remember, folks, Battenkill is 2.5 weeks away, 3 weeks away. That training plan has been deeply discounted at 60% off. You can find the details on the Tailwind Coaching Facebook page for that. I have been very slowly working on my Criterium module for my modular training plans, and that should be coming along relatively shortly. Remember, as always, those of you who are listening to the podcast, use the discount code PODCAST10 at my online Tailwind Coaching training plan store, and you can take 10% off any and all training plans. So, all that out of the way, I'm not going to give you a training update, and there's a very good reason why. In fact, it's the exact reason why I am a very big candidate for falling into the high-intensity trap, and I'm going to explain that right after I suck down a little bit of coffee. Okay, so where have I been in the last 5 to 6 weeks? Well, and the reason I have I'm doing this training update this way is because about maybe a month ago, I came down with the flu. Not just, yeah, a little stomach bug or you're feeling kind of crappy for a couple days. I'm talking about the full-on, full-blown, laying in bed, praying for death flu. The actual flu itself lasted about a week to 10 days. It was accompanied by a dry hacking cough. Now, I'm talking a cough that was so persistent that I actually managed to tear an intercostal muscle. That's the muscle in between your ribs from coughing. So consequently, for the last month, I've either been sick and unable to do anything, or I've been coughing so hard when I try to do something that I'm unable to do anything, or I've been dealing with the after effects of a torn intercostal muscle. So consequently, I have been doing very little, if any, training. In fact, I think in a month I've had, I've managed to make 3 training rides. bear in mind now my racing schedule is starting the middle of May. So I am, as of recording, this is March 13th. So I'm kind of under the gun here. Sounds like I could try to race myself into shape. But if you recall last time during the Avoiding the High Intensity Trap Part 1, we talked about the concept of racing oneself into shape, how high-intensity exercise, high-intensity interval work tends to give many of the same benefits or similar benefits to comparable base training work or lower-intensity, longer-duration, higher-frequency work. We also talked about the basic fact that adequate recovery is absolutely necessary regardless of what kind of training you're doing. Assuming you're doing a high-intensity plan, that means that you need more recovery. And we also talked about the fact that most people do not adequately recover, and they tend to go too far with high-intensity interval training, and especially people who are doing high-intensity work very early in the season. Somebody who's racing in May, you'd be talking about somebody who is doing high-intensity work in January. All right. With regards to my own situation, it's worth noting that I had about 5 weeks of training in, 4 weeks of base type work, and 1 week of high intensity work, zone 5, zone 6, zone 7. That is a new blocking system, which I'm trying out on myself to see what the results were. And to the point where I'd gotten sick, the results were actually quite good. So, be that as it may, the fact remains I have only about 5 weeks of training under my belt, and I have about 8 weeks to go until my first major races of the season. Unfortunately, I lost a month of base time, so I'm looking at starting a build phase with very limited base fitness. All right. This puts me specifically, and you if you undertake this kind of plan, at risk of falling into the trap. And that trap is basically the trap of overtraining. So that we have an idea of what overtraining is, let's talk about some of the possible mechanisms for overtraining. We all know that the higher intensity work that we do, the more microtrauma our body suffers to joints, muscles, tendons, ligaments, and in many cases, in most cases actually, the microtrauma to our muscles is what gives us a burned up, tired, and overtrained feeling. Right, microtrauma is basically a concept where individual muscle fibers on a cellular level are torn. That typically happens under high intensity loads. Weightlifting is a great example of something that has high microtrauma potential. But again, also high intensity sprinting intervals, VO2 max intervals, zone 5, 6, 7 work also creates a lot of microtrauma in the body, not only physically caused, but also chemically caused microtrauma. Damage to the muscles is, in these cases, is typically created much faster than the body can heal it. Okay, so that leaves our body in a constant state of damage. A body that is constantly damaged, or you could even say injured, does not perform well. All right. Very frequently, the higher we bring our intensity, the more our body requires amino acids to rebuild those micro tears and that micro trauma in our muscles. In many, many cases, the American diet is very, very high in carbohydrates, very low in protein or amino acid, or I should even say high quality amino acids. McDonald's hamburger does not really count as decent protein, folks. And I would hope that any of you that are listening to this podcast, if you're eating at McDonald's, just stop it. Stop it right now. If I could come to your home and kick your ass, I would do it for that. Okay. If you're going to perform at a high level and perform high intensity work, you need to be able to supply proper amino acids in your diet, okay? The lack of that proper amino acid is basically called a protein deficiency, and many, many, many Americans have that. If you look at the back of most of the stuff that we eat, since most of the stuff that we eat, actually most of the stuff that most people eat, I should say, most athletes don't touch this stuff, is mostly packaged, you would be amazed at the amount of sugar and carbohydrate total that is in most things that people eat. It's unreal, folks. Most of the diet is carbohydrates. Go on to MyFitnessPal and log 5 days of your food. See what your average consumption of carbohydrate, protein, and fat over a five-day period is. I guarantee you will be remarkably surprised at how little protein you take in and how much carbohydrate you actually eat. Okay? So, thus far we have microtrauma to muscles. We have a lack of amino acids or a protein deficiency, the body actually becomes calorie deficient, and the rate of muscle tissue breakdown increases. Okay. That's very common when people start doing very long sets of intervals at a very high intensity or very frequent intensity. Okay. The more calories you take, you put out without replacing them and replacing them with proper high quality calories, the more chance you have to become calorie deficient. Okay. As you become calorie deficient, you become protein deficient, you become further injured from the amount of microtrauma you're putting your body through. You have levels of cortisol, which become elevated for longer periods of time. You may have heard of cortisol from some of the other buzzwords and buzz information out on the internet as the stress hormone. And that's very true. It is a stress response hormone, a fight or flight hormone. And it is typically a sympathetic hormone, which basically keeps your body in an elevated alert status. Let's call it that for just to try and keep it a little bit more layman's terms. All right. When you are facing a high cortisol level, you are calorie deficient, and you're especially if you're amino acid deficient, and you have to repair muscle trauma or tissue trauma in the body, which is typically caused by high intensity training, your body will spend a lot more time in a catabolic state than an anabolic state. There's some evidence that a high cortisol level will actually boost that catabolic state as well. Being a sympathetic hormone, it's trying to get your body ready to perform at any given time. Now, catabolic and anabolic, those of you who are at all familiar with bodybuilding will understand that anabolic is the building phase, building state, building word. An anabolic hormone or an anabolic steroid, for example, like testosterone, which is also a very important hormone in terms of recovery. That's actually why it's very frequently abused in doping cases. Anabolic hormones like testosterone help to rebuild body tissues. They help to rebuild muscle tissue. They help to rebuild joint tissue, ligament tissue, et cetera, et cetera. And it is a very important hormone. Most anabolic hormones are very important in playing a role in muscle hypertrophy and muscle fiber proliferation, as well as other subcellular adaptations, such as increases in mitochondrial density, increases in capillary density. I just said capillary density. I'm not from Australia. Not that there's anything wrong with my Aussie friends, but I'm not from Australia. Capillary density and other such things. So all this excessive strain on the body will prevent you from recovering and actually increase your risk of overtraining or falling into that intensity trap. In addition to all of these sort of metabolic issues, there is an excessive strain on the nervous system during training. Every single muscle contraction in the body is controlled by a specific neurological impulse, a specific nervous system activity. So if you think I want to turn that pedal around, that means that is a whole specific system of neurotransmitters that have to fire off, of different nerves, motor neurons that have to fire off, different afferent and efferent effects that have to be processed by the body. And all of that puts a significant strain on the nervous system. Not to mention the nervous system is your general central governor, and that is going to be what determines, in many cases, your, how do I put this from a very layman's terms, your state of doneness, okay? The central governor theory, for those of you who are not familiar, I'll go through this really quickly. Your brain basically will shut down your activity when that activity becomes harmful to your body. So assuming you are working a high-intensity training plan, there's a very good chance that your body may actually decide to shut you down once you overtrain, all right? So a big portion of this can be beaten by diet and proper rest. One of the most important things in this, however, and something that I have been doing a lot of research on and in the recent past, was the effect of cortisol. on your training, your overtraining, et cetera, et cetera. And the reason why is because cortisol being a stress hormone, the number of athletes that I have actually talked to and consulted with, whether in person, whether over the internet, whether via email, via Twitter, so many people have such significant amounts of stress in their lives. And they are they're taking on huge cycling and racing demands. People who have two and three kids, they have two jobs, they have odd hours for their jobs, they work 45, 50, 60, 70 hours a week. They have responsibilities at home, they have a home that they have to maintain, they have children, they have pets, they have etc., etc. It's no secret that nowadays in society we are inundated by significant, huge external stressors. And those significant, huge external stressors will play a huge part in your recovery and your ability to train at a high level. And a lot of that ability is basically dictated by that hormone that we just talked about, cortisol. All right. While it is necessary for very proper metabolic function, in excess, like I said before, it creates an increased fight or flight response. All right. So, the idea being, you have, for example, a very stressful situation at work. Maybe there's a round of layoffs coming, or quarterly reviews are happening, or something of that nature, and you're stressed out. You might lose your job, or something of that nature. That puts an increased demand on your body, on your systems, on your physiology. Now, those of you who've listened to this podcast before, and those of you who've read my training or my Beginner's Guide to Power series of articles, will understand that on the performance management chart, there is a little bar called training stress balance. There's a little bar called acute training load. There's one called chronic training load. Okay. And most of us will go out for a training ride. We'll do our intervals. We'll come back. We'll plug our Garmin or our SRM power control or whatever we're using, or power tap PED unit, whatever, into our computer. We'll download our training metrics and we'll look at our performance management chart and said, oh cool, I did 120 training stress and my acute training load is 55, my chronic training load is 65, and my training stress balance is -20. Well, yes and no. In a cycling-specific world, and if that was all you were doing, yes, that's very true. in the real world, however, maybe you did that ride on a Sunday, and maybe on Monday you went to work and you had your performance review and it didn't go so well. So now you have a whole lot of additional stress placed on your body by that performance review and by the psychological aspects of, am I going to be okay? Am I going to lose my job? Am I going to get a raise? Am I not going to get a raise? All these other things that are happening. Okay. That increases your cortisol beyond the levels which are documented in your WKO or Golden Sheet or whatever is in your performance management chart. All right. That increase in cortisol through a source that's completely unrelated to your cycling, by the way, has a huge effect on your cycling fitness and your ability to recover. It's just a fact, folks. Your outside life stresses hurt your cycling fitness. Okay? And the way it does such a thing is, for example, taking cortisol, which is one of the hormones. However, it is one of the big ones. An excess of cortisol will decrease DHEA, dihydroxyepiandrosterone, which is a precursor to testosterone, present in both men and women, by the way. It'll also decrease testosterone, present in both men and women. It decreases the availability, the bioavailability of various nutrients, okay? Increased cortisol suppresses immune function, okay? It promotes muscle catabolism and fat storage. Those all don't sound like good things. Catabolism, by the way, is breakdown. Again, just in case some of my non-physiology-related folks are curious. Those all do not sound like good things if you're trying to recover from really high-intensity efforts, folks. Okay, decreased availability of nutrients will directly lead to that caloric deficit, that protein deficiency, which will lead to a lack of healing of that tissue microtrauma. Decreases in DHEA and testosterone, also in IGF-1, et cetera, will cause or hinder your body's ability to recover. Suppressed immune function is one we see a lot in professional cyclists. How often do you see guys who are racing in the Spring Classics suddenly get sick, either early on or right after the Classics are over? Folks, it's not a case of... I've seen a number of times that it's funny to me every time. I've seen a number of times people on the internet, you know, sitting there at their keyboard typing away like, it's there because they're eating cow shit when it's dirty and wet and it's on their face. No. Although, yes, there is some evidence. Okay, fine. You're eating cow crap. Probably not good for you. But the amount of training and racing that these guys do, especially in very iffy conditions, cold, wet, rainy conditions, suppresses their immune function along with the cortisol that they built up in their body from a significant amount of racing days already. And that's that suppressed immune function basically allows them to get sick. All right. Again, catabolic states and fat storage are generally bad things for people who are looking to build muscle, decrease fat, and increase their power to weight ratio. Obviously, power and muscle mass do typically go together in some ways. Some other interesting tidbits about the cortisol issue. A Swiss study of elite male cyclists suggested that ratios of anabolic to catabolic hormones, testosterone to cortisol, IGF-1, insulin-like growth factor, or to cortisol, may be useful markers for the detection of overtraining. And that comes from Hoog et al. 2003. In fact, it's actually interesting. Scientists use a free testosterone to cortisol ratio to evaluate athletes' training states. A ratio where cortisol is elevated indicates an overtraining type situation. So the modulation of that ratio can be key for athletes who are susceptible to overtraining. So those of you who have extremely high outside stresses in your life, kids, home, work to do on your home, stress at work, things like that, you may be susceptible to overtraining, and it might be a case of that external stress is causing your body too much stress on top of your training to actually properly recover. Okay. Another little tidbit here, a literature review of hormonal responses to exercise by Steinacher et al. In 2003 suggested that with glycogen deficiency, quote, cortisol levels are elevated and induce a myopathy-like state in skeletal muscle, end quote. Now, that's a very interesting concept because there's a huge push right now for a paleo lifestyle. And Anthony Culpo is a, I don't know if he's a nutritionist or a dietitian or what exactly he is, but Google Anthony Culpo. He's a very interesting, interesting guy to read. In terms of his explanations of why low-carb diets are really terrible for endurance athletes. Some of this literature actually shows that when you decrease the amount of glycogen in your body, i.e. you follow a low-carb diet, you will elevate your cortisol levels, and that will lead to all sorts of bad stuff that we just previously talked about. So, with a basic idea of what is overtraining, why it happens, chemically what goes on, how do we control it? How do we prevent it? And how do we prevent overtraining and prevent falling into the intensity trap? Well, I'm going to tell you how to do it for yourself, and I'm going to explain basically how I'm going to do that right after a quick break. All right, back after a really quick break there. Just had to blow my nose. Like I said, I'm still dealing with the effects of that that damn flu that basically ravaged my entire office. It's been a rough couple weeks, folks. That's why I haven't been doing podcasts. I've not been the normal chipper person that I typically am. So, how do we control the intensity trap? How do we prevent overtraining? And how do we prevent ourselves from basically falling into a spiral that we have to spend a bunch of time digging out of? Well, we have to really start by taking care of the things that we see and we deal with on a daily basis. Number one among those, and the number one thing that I find people have a lot of trouble with, is simply managing their nutrition. Okay? They or you have to basically eat for the activities you are involved in. All right? In this case, we're talking about longer duration endurance type sports. Cycling is by definition an aerobic endurance sport. So what are some tips on managing our nutrition, especially during the day, so that we can prevent and avoid overtraining? Well, breakfast is a very simple way to modulate and manage your overtraining. Okay, it's a must. I'm going to say that. It is a must. You need it to regulate your blood sugar and your cortisol levels. Remember that that study that said that with glycogen depletion, cortisol levels are elevated. All right. Glycogen and liver glycogen, muscle glycogen, and blood sugar levels are typically at their lowest point when you wake up in the morning. Okay. And that's because the body has been basically at rest overnight and has not been taking in any carbohydrate for 5 to 6 to 8 hours. All right. So with a low level of carbs in the morning, breakfast is a must to regulate your blood sugar and down regulate that cortisol before you exercise. All right. I know there are some people out there that love to do what they call depleters. And yes, there is some benefit in doing depleters, mostly from a physiological standpoint where your body becomes tolerant to a lack of glycogen. And there's some evidence that the body may become a little bit better at preserving the glycogen it has. But overall, the idea of doing a depleter is essentially doing you more harm than good. It does not mobilize more fatty acid. It does not do anything to really burn fat more significantly. It does nothing except really make you cranky and miserable if you're into going out and riding on an empty stomach first thing in the morning. All right, so breakfast is a must before morning exercise because, remember, our glycogen depletion causes a raise in cortisol, and free carbohydrates in your blood will prevent that. Look at your vitamin B dosage. General vitamin dosages for B-complex should be adequate. B-complex or B vitamins tend to regulate endocrine hormones, which not only includes cortisol, but it also does include anabolic hormones such as testosterone, DHEA, IGF-1, etc., etc. All those are dependent on B vitamins to essentially function and function properly. So regulating your B vitamin intake is also an important step in preventing overtraining and falling into that intensity trap. All right. In terms of combating protein deficiency or amino acid deficiency caused by significant amounts of microtrauma, branched chain amino acids and glutamines have been shown to not only help to rebuild muscle, but to reduce cortisol levels significantly. There's some evidence that branched chain amino acid is basically a cortisol killer, which is actually kind of a cool thing. Obviously, more research is needed on that to basically say, yep, this is what you're going to be doing. But still, any advantage or any port in a storm is always something good. And of course, the most important thing here, even though we're talking about nutritional states and things like that, the number one thing to prevent yourself from falling into an overtrained or intensity trap situation is to manage your training properly. As a plug for what I do, this is why you need a coach, or this is why at least you need a training plan and a little bit of common sense. And I only say that because so many people blindly follow a training plan into the abyss. I've known and consulted with a few people who are relative beginners, and they followed training plans like they've seen in Bicycling Magazine. Or some of them have gotten free training plans from a certain website that shall remain nameless, that has a performance management suite built into their website that you can pay $100 a year for. Some people have gotten hold of those plans and have basically run themselves into the ground by following it, going, well, you know, it told me to do this, so I had to go out and do it. No. You chose to go out and do it, and you didn't pay attention to what your body was telling you. If your body was telling you that you need a day off and you're not taking a day off, the potential to overtrain is significant. All right, so how do we modulate our training to prevent our cortisol response from peaking? How do we prevent overtraining and falling into that trap? Well, avoiding the intensity trap is a case of avoiding the more is better rule. All right. If you are doing high intensity intervals, more is not necessarily better. Okay. You have to, let me step back from that. More is not necessarily better unless you have a significant base to build upon. You need to ensure you have an adequate base of lower intensity training, okay, prior to your build phase. All right, so that base phase, that base time that you've spent inside on the trainer or outside doing those long miles, you better be focusing on your skills, not just putting in miles and putting in saddle time. And we're talking leg speed skills. We're talking single leg drills. We're talking muscular endurance skills and drills. We're talking about technique drills. We're talking about climbing technique. We're talking about seated climbing technique. We're talking about form sprints. Notice I said form, not intensity. Form sprints to build your sprinting form if that's something that you're needing to do. All right. Remember that your base training is not just long distance training out on the bike. Sure, you can go out for a day's ride and you can just go and look at the scenery and enjoy the ride. That's fine. I have no problem with that. Base training, aerobic gains are built while you're training your essential skills, which prepare you for more high intensity work later on in your training plan. Without training those essential skills, you're putting yourself at a disservice and a disadvantage for the second, third, fourth, fifth months of your training plan itself. Okay? When you move into a build phase, like I'm about to hit right about now, like I said, this is the 13th of March. Next week, I'm scheduled to start hitting build phases, and I'll get to that in just a minute. When you hit your build phase, remember that high-intensity training is not a case of more is always better. High-intensity work should be done around 1 to 2 times per week in the base phase of your training. And when I mean high-intensity, we could simply be talking about 2x20-minute threshold intervals. Okay, during a base phase, high-intensity is relative. All right, you may want to do one day of a couple of race winners or zone 5 repeats or something like that. Zone 5 repeats are a great way to get some threshold work in and some high intensity work all in the same day. All right, 1 to 2 times per week in the base phase, no more than 3 times a week in your build phase, unless you are very specifically targeting a 3+1 or a 2+2 type of intensity blocking in your build phase. I'll get into that in a later podcast. That's a entirely new experiment, which has some very positive outcomes thus far. But I'll get to that at a different time. And when you hit a peak phase, you're talking very, very short, very high intensity work and a very frequent a very high frequency. So during a peak phase, I'll probably, for example, myself, I will do a half hour of extremely high intensity riding every day, 5 days a week before I race, just so that I can sharpen any remaining skills, sprint skills particularly, and maintain that high level of fitness while building form. Okay. When you do high intensity work, and this is the key to this entire thing, you must prioritize your recovery more than anything else. recovery is absolutely the key to not falling into the intensity trap. So if you spend an hour riding high intensity intervals, you better be preparing to spend about 5 to 6 hours to recover from that. All right. Do not simply go by your performance management chart. You need to take your performance management chart into account along with the daily stresses that you submit yourself to in your regular life. If you have a particularly stressful week at work, it's probably not a good idea to go out and do, you know, 3 hours of high intensity training on the weekend. You're probably at enough of a deficit where your body is not going to be able to recover properly, especially if you're going back to that same high stress, high intensity kind of environment the following week. All right. So basically, we need to manage our nutrition. We need to control some of our hormone levels through our nutrition and through our training. Another part of this, which I'll very briefly touch on, is the mental aspect of training and of intensity work. High intensity work is very painful. It's very mentally taxing. And this goes right along to the same issue we have where our body is sensitive to any outside stresses. If we have mental issues or mental stress from outside, that will play right into our fitness. Consider meditation. Consider some kind of relaxation. Anything that can reduce our mental stress load, as that will help to also prevent your body from entering that catabolic state or prevent that buildup of cortisol. All right. Now, very quickly, as I promised I would do before I get out of here, and this is a very odd, short podcast for me, but I'm going to go over very quickly some anecdotal evidence that I've dealt with and also a few examples of how I plan to prevent myself from falling into the intensity trap with 2 months to go till my first racing days. All right, folks, the first anecdotal part of this that I have, and the reason that this is a topic that's fairly near and dear to my heart is I've been through this in the past. My first racing season, I was 2010. Prior to that, I never really wanted to race, never had the ambition to race, mainly because I didn't feel that I was strong enough. In 2009, I spent a lot of time riding, did get fairly strong. In 2010, I figured I was going to build on that. I got stuck in that high intensity trap, using a coach actually before I took a significant interest in coaching and the process of coaching and training. I utilized the services of another coach, and he was very, very much, well, he had a background in weightlifting, was a state champion weightlifter back in the day, and was all about the high intensity work. During that racing preseason, I did all kinds of high intensity intervals. I did high intensity work, folks. I did high intensity stuff 4 to 5 days per week. Now we're talking from January all the way up until April. The first race of the year I remember that year was Tour of the Battenkill, and I did fairly decently in Battenkill that year. I managed to survive despite the horrendous conditions, the ridiculous heat. I think it was 72 degrees or 73 degrees on race day after previously a high of like 40. So battled through cramps and all sorts of other issues that were unforeseen at the time. But I was relatively happy about that. And most of my early season races and my group rides and all that were very good. I had great form. I had great fitness, you know, going from mid-pack and hanging on climbs to basically setting tempo and dropping people on most of the climbs up in the Catskills was a great feeling. That feeling basically just dropped off a cliff come mid-season. All right, my FTP was way down, my ambition to ride was way down. I became basically just a grumpy asshole. People at work didn't want to be anywhere near me. Patients didn't want to be anywhere near me. You know, my wife was just like, you know, what the hell's going on with you, man? That kind of thing was going on. You know, and it was basically a case of being overtrained and not having enough base fitness. The only way out of that was basically to pull it all back and start from square one, start from base building again. Do 6 to 8 weeks of base work and then just add intensity after the fact. And at that time, I was doing base work kind of, you know, the go out and just go for a ride and enjoy the scenery kind of stuff. And that's exactly what I needed, both physically and mentally, to refresh my body and to figure out where I needed to be and what I needed to be doing with my fitness. This year, I'm finding myself in 2014 stuck in a very similar situation. I've got a block of four races coming up, starting like May 18th and running through like June 12th, 16th, something like that. And we're talking state championship criterium. We're talking Tour of Somerville, the state championship road race, and Tour of Pittman, all coming in a four-week block. And I'm basically stuck at the end of base one with maybe a week of high-intensity work in there. Like I said, I'm varying some blocking schemes, so let's see how that goes. Anyway, my plan to stay out of that intensity trap is to sort of build on a build base amalgamation of training, if you will, for the next 3 to 4 weeks, with at least one high intensity session per week. So I'm really going to mishmash my training together. Now, I typically actually use my own modular training systems with some obvious tweaks, which are easy for me to do, obviously. Knowing my own weaknesses and what I need to work on, I can tweak them very, very easily. So basically what I'm going to be doing with my modular systems is I'm going to be taking like a workout from base two, I'm going to take a workout from build one, I'm going to mash them together, and we're going to see how we do with that. I'm very hesitant to throw in 2 months of high-intensity work and hope for the best. I have no doubt it'll work for the early season, but I also have late-season goals, too, that I would like to be in shape for, and that's not going to be acceptable if I can't even make it through, for example, June. So the big keys for me are going to be proper workout selection to really build on my weaknesses and maintain the strengths that I already have and the strengths that I've developed over the winter. As I said, I've been doing a lot of functional body movement, functional weight work, things like that, which will improve muscular strength and recruitment. So I need to build upon that. I need to maintain the threshold and the aerobic fitness that I still have from last year and the years prior. And I need to prioritize my recovery by increasing the amount of sleep, minimizing the amount of stress that I have in the rest of my life, whether it be work or whether it be any other outside stressors. Gotta love the tax season is coming up right in the middle of a training block, right? Everybody loves tax season. The tax man. I digress. Anyway, minimizing outside stress, basically minimizing any mental discord, probably going to focus on doing more meditative type things, relaxation, imagery, visualization, things like that. And of course, like I said, increased sleep so that I can avoid that overtraining condition. All right, so there's a little quick insight into my brain as to how I've thought this through, how I'd be putting it together. And that will hopefully give you a little insight into your own situation, should you find yourself in it, as to how you can manage to get out of it. All right. So, again, I apologize for taking 5 to 6 weeks to get this out. Actually, no, I don't apologize. I was sick and I've been feeling miserable and I was very cranky. So, you know what? It sucks, but that's what happens. And, you know, at least it's out there. We're getting out there now. And I'm glad to be back here giving information to you guys. I will see you very shortly. I will be speaking to you all very shortly, probably with a topic of neuromotor control and its importance in cycling and fitness and workouts in general, and ways that you can basically ensure that you are not causing some kind of damage or compensatory issue with your body. And I'll talk about that next time. But until then, thank you for listening. Don't forget to go over to iTunes, rate this podcast 5 stars if you like what you see, if you like what you hear. I don't think any of you are watching me outside my window, especially because it's 18 degrees with a wind chill of -2. I don't think any of you are outside my window. Head on over to iTunes, rate this podcast 5 stars. If you need to get a hold of me, remember, you can find me on tailwind-coaching.com. That's the website. You can email me at coachrobdc@gmail.com. You can find me on Facebook at the Tailwind Coaching Facebook page. You can find me on Twitter at coachrobdc. So, thank you all for listening. I want you to be strong. I want you to be fit. Be happy. I want you to manage your fitness. I want you to manage your training. I want you to manage your hormonal levels. Avoid that intensity trap. Keep the shiny side up, keep the rubber side down, and I will be talking to you all very soon.